The Poet Speaks. In this program, Leslie Norris talks to John Press.
Do you write prose as well as verse?
No, I write no prose. I have written plays for the BBC service for children, but those were tasks which were given to me. I don't write any prose at all.
Are your plays verse, then?
No. No, they include some verse, but they're mixed prose and verse. I don't find it easy to write prose at all.
Have you any desire to write full-length verse plays for the adult stage?
No, none at all. I don't think I have that kind of talent. I think longish lyrics are about what I like to write, best of all. Yeah.
Have you been writing poetry for long?
Yes, I've been writing poetry since I was 16, really, without stopping, one might say. Yeah.
What set you off on this?
Oh, a comic situation. When I was in school, we used to have a school newspaper for charity purposes, and I wrote lots of comic verse for this thing, and I found that I liked doing this. And when I was perhaps 18 or so, I found myself, so to speak, a serious poet.
Were you very much affected by any English poet or American poet, either among your contemporaries or of the past?
Yes, well, of course, I was terribly influenced by Dylan Thomas, but I read very widely as a young man in contemporary work, and American poets, Frost particularly, I read a lot of Frost. And more recently, Lowell. I read a great deal of Lowell, read him regularly. I also read Hardy's poems, and still do read a lot of Hardy.
What about the people in between? For example, you said that Hardy and Frost were your favourites. Mm. They seem to me to represent one very strong tradition.
Yes.
Lowell, on the other hand, seems to me much more in the direct line of descent from Eliot and Pound. Do you reconcile these two?
Yes, I see what you mean by that, but they seem to me conversational poets. They speak directly to me, and this is perhaps what I recognize in them. It is the personal voice of these people that I recognize and love. There are other poets in the 30s, I suppose, that I used to read a great deal of Auden. I don't so much now, but I think Auden has had an influence on the shape of my verse, which I recognize still, but I don't read him now. I can't think of anyone else among contemporary poets that I am shaped by, but I read a great deal of Spencer when I was learning my craft, so to speak. Deliberately learning it, and I learned a great deal from Spencer. I think I like his poetry more than anyone else's, almost.
Is it that you like his mastery of the verbal element, of the metrical skill, or the way in which he looks at the world?
I think it is his verbal element. Lines of Spencer are always with me. They swim into my mind at oddest moments. So do odd lines by other poets, which carry this kind of verbal element that we're talking about. Now sleeps the crimson petal, now the white, that kind of thing. There are lots of Tennyson I know in snatches of this nature. And I'm inclined to think it's the tune of things that I go for, although I would say my own verse is largely visual, which is a curious paradox.
Have you felt any strong desire to experiment technically with such forms as syllabic verse, with sprung rhythm, with very elaborate patterns?
Yes, yes. In fact, I think I've grown through that. Lots of my early verse was extraordinarily involved technically, and I used all sorts of meters and all sorts of shapes, sprung rhythm among them. But Now I seem to be writing much more simply than I ever have before, and I only occasionally recognize a line which carries a hint of that old feeling, that old difficulty.
When you say you used these elaborate patterns, were they traditionally elaborate patterns, or did you go back, say, to Welsh poetry for even more complex
Yes,
ones?
Yes, I did use patterns of alliteration, for example, which are traditionally Welsh, using it at one time or another, all seven forms of the Canghanedd, the bardic tradition, but they weren't terribly successful. On the other hand, occasional little constructions still carry this. In one of the poems, I do have a line which is constructed like that. I didn't know it was. It's in the autumn elegy. They died in their flames. Hard war destroyed them, which might almost be a translation directly from the Welsh, with the syllables beginning and ending in D, for example, and in the rhythm itself of that line.
Do you speak Welsh?
I was brought up to speak Welsh. I've lost a lot of it. It takes me a little while to get back into that. I read Welsh more easily than I speak it now.
And do you think that these experiments have been good for your verse?
Yes. Yes, although I don't use these techniques now, I think that I'm very confident in the relatively simply handling of my verse, because I feel behind what I'm writing all sorts of resources if I need them. Yes, I think it has been helpful.
Do you write very fast?
Very, very quickly indeed. Not very often, but very quickly indeed, so that quite long poems will take perhaps an hour, and numerous versions of the thing, but I will finish it very quickly. On the other hand, it may be a month in preparation in my head, but once I sit down to write, I know that I'm going to finish it.
Have you any particular audience in mind when you set about writing a poem?
I think this varies from poem to poem, really. Sometimes I write for a particular person. The Quarrel, for example, is written for my wife. And Lunch at the Orlando is obviously a letter to Ted Walker, you see. But on the other hand, I sometimes write for much bigger groups. But not consciously, I feel. I think this is a kind of general poem.
Would you like to have a large audience?
I think yes. I think I'd like the poetry to be read, yes. I feel sure that the more one's poetry is read, the more fruitful one becomes oneself, the more poetry one writes, I mean.
Do you think of a poem primarily as a cluster of images or as a verbal shape?
I think of the poem mainly as a cluster of images. That is to say, very often a poem starts with a line that I have and a kind of feeling around the line. But the image itself explores the feeling and brings out of it a number of related images. A poem is a kind of voyage of discovery. I'm never sure what the poem is going to be when it ends, how it's going to end, but I do know when it ends, if you see what I mean. When I'm writing along, very often another image will come into my mind, which I write in the margin because I know that's going to be in some future part of the poem. And sometimes the end of the poem comes as I'm writing the middle, and I jot that down somewhere out of the way, knowing that's the end of it.
Now, in that poem about the blind boxer, which I believe has very often been anthologized, broadcast, and so forth, was this a poem which was planned from the beginning? It had, it seemed, a very strong narrative line, or was this composed as a kind of dialectic of images?
I sometimes think that the longer poems of mine really are attempts to explain, to put in order certain experiences of mine which are apparently chaotic, and we need to have them in order, to put them away neatly. It's a perfectly true poem. All those things actually happened to me. And, you see, I think going to the football match brought to my mind, seeing once again that box, what I'd seen as a child. I'd not thought about it, and that came unbidden into my mind. I it's a very strong narrative line, I do agree, but I didn't think of it as a narrative poem at all. I deliberately chose its shape, which is something I've not done in any other poem. I made it a kind of broadsheet shape, a kind of street ballad shape. I did that deliberately. And to that extent, I suppose it's a more conscious poem than any of the others. But it came in the same way as all the other poems, in that the story was not what I was aiming for at all. It was an attempt to put an order onto an experience which had obviously moved me terribly, and I had hidden away until it had come out. But I sometimes think lots of my poems come from this kind of self-healing, if you like.
Is this then your prime purpose in writing a poem, a self-exploration, a self-healing, rather than the need to communicate?
No, I think motives are very complex. I think that I believe, if I can oversimplify this, the one purpose is to be a poet, you know. I don't go any deeper than that. I should be very upset if I didn't write poetry, as this is the thing I want to do. I think, in a sense, it's a bardic feeling. I want to, in a way, almost tell these poems to people. I feel rather like a storyteller in verse, if you like.
One can't, in fact, separate the two desires.
No, I can't, anyway.
Are you affected in your poems more strongly by the daily experiences, by your surroundings, or by what one may call the more impersonal themes of literature, the other arts?
I think I'm strongly influenced by my own experiences and an attempt to make universal, in a sense, what are precise and personal experiences, an attempt to unify the life of a man, if you like, within the life of men. I think that's... there are obviously literary lines in my work, and I recognize them afterwards rather than during the writing.
This is almost a Wordsworthian creed.
Yes, it's very, very like... Yes, I recognize this similarity.
And do you think this is why you're not so much impressed, or you're not so enthusiastic about the poems of Eliot and Pound?
I am impressed by the work of Eliot and Pound, but it's a different part. I'm impressed with my intellect. My intellect does this, and I stand back and admire these things. And very often I say, ha, that's how he's done it, you know? But it's a quite different thing. It's a kind of critical appreciation. Whereas more often than not, I don't feel like that. It's a kind of emotive thing.
Are most of your friends artists of some kind?
Yes, yes, they are, yes. I think that's quite natural. I think one tends to attract and be attracted by people whose work is akin to yours, to whom, in fact, you can speak by a kind of shorthand, if you like, and for whom, in many cases, you write because you know perfectly well they know what you're writing about and for, and how important it is.
And what about your job? Do you find this a help or a hindrance?
Oh, it's a very great help. I'm dealing with young people who are enthusiastic and tremendous readers, and to have little background, really, one is constantly guiding them over their reading oneself, discovering in them new means, new ways of feeling and expressing. It's very exciting. Ideally, I suppose, I would like not to have to work as long in order that one would have more time for one's own writing. But even so, it is an enriching experience to work with them.
With children?
These are young people, between 18 and 23.
You don't do any teaching?
Yes, I do teach children. I very much enjoy, I was for years a teacher of young children of the primary age and a headmaster of an all-age school, one of the last in the country. I very much enjoy teaching children. And in fact, I've done a lot of work with children between the ages of 8 and 11 who are natural poets, of course. And that has given me a great thrill.
Now, you say children are natural poets. What then is it that knocks the nonsense out of them?
Ah, well, now, we could go on for a long time over this. I rather think teachers do. No, I think something happens during adolescence, really, a kind of self-criticism. I mean, they begin to realize they can't draw like Leonardo or something, whereas when they're 11, they think they can, and of course they do draw beautifully then. They are confident and happy, but they become self-critical when they're 14 or 15, and they know they can't do things beautifully and well. And if we keep them in the habit of writing, then they continue to be poets. I think there's something that happens in that time. We say to them, well, we'll learn more maths, or we won't write poetry, or we will write these essays, or we will write these exercises, and they get out of the habit, I think.
Is it then largely a social, political problem which arises out of the sort of society we have, or is this part of human nature in any conceivable system?
No, I know of schools, secondary modern schools, for example, pretty tough boys' schools with good football teams and good boxing teams, and where everybody's perfectly rough and tough, where, in fact, most of the boys write delightful poems. I think it just needs a teacher of English who is at once sensitive and enthusiastic and who reads to them a lot and keeps them in touch. See, the thing is that they're still reading, in fact, poets who mean little to them when they ought to be reading modern poets and working their way back eventually to Wordsworth and so on. If they have modern poetry and they find there are men, young men, living today who write for them, then the trick is done, I think.
You approve of anthologies by people such as Charles Corsley, Ted Hughes, Michael Baldwin?
Oh, yes. I approve of anthologies of that nature. I also approve of collections of poems by individual poets going into school. I approve much more of that, in fact. I think that the only good anthology is the one which the child makes for himself or the teacher makes for his particular children. I have seen remarkable results from this kind of work.
Are there any signs that these views of yours are being accepted either by teachers whom you train, or still more important, by the education authorities?
Yes, oh yes. Quite a large number of anthologies of this nature are now available. And my students do it regularly. They don't see much odd or difficult about it. And I in fact, lecture to lots of education authorities on this very topic. And they're all very enthusiastic.
And do you think that if one had a greater understanding of poetry among more people, this would help to produce more first-rate poets? Or is a poet front rank a kind of freak of nature?
I think that there are lots more poets than people recognize. I think that a poet is not an uncommon fellow at all. But I think the opportunity for him to become a developing and growing poet isn't as common as perhaps it might be. And I'm quite sure that if our schools were more sympathetic, then it would be... You see, in Wales, it's a good thing socially to be a poet. I'm not at all worried by the fact I'm a poet, so to speak. It's a good thing. And therefore, I have this security in which to work. Now, this isn't necessarily the case in England, I feel.
But it might be.
I think it could be, and I think we are reaching towards it. I think it will be.
Leslie Norris was talking to John Press. This program was one in a series entitled The Poet Speaks, produced by the Recorded Sound Section of the British Council in London.